Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2640. That's 2640. Tonight we're going to have a really good guest, and he's been on TV. I think he said the 700 Club, which we'll still be talking about that also. He's been on other podcasts or radio shows, and he's done an awful lot. And in a few minutes, he's going to be telling us his story. I see that there is a 931 area code here. Let me get this person on as well. Darlene, is that you?
It's hello, loud hello. Here, so I can't talk.
Oh.
Yeah, it's loud okay. Here, so I can't talk.
Okay. All right, sweetheart. All right. Well, at least you're there. Once in a while, you can make a comment. I'll just leave your mic open. There's only three of us tonight. There's our guest, there's myself, and now there's you. Okay. First of all, what I want to do is get out of the way, the mission statement, and speak a little bit about that, and then we're going to get to our guest. He has quite a story to tell. He has told his story many, many times in many different areas, and I'm very, very proud of him because he has he's just plain doing so much. So anyway, I'm going to read the statement. It says, we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. And that's number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone, and also offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues of involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, people who know me always say to me, Carol, you're always many times speaking about prevention. The three of them are very important, prevention, intervention, and recovery. But, However, prevention, if there was more prevention out there, it makes common sense to me that maybe there wouldn't be such a horrific problem of child abuse. I call it crimes against children because that's what it is. It's crimes against children. So tonight we have with us Sean Wheeler, and we were speaking just for minutes. We were trying to speak for minutes, you know, and then the show started. So anyway, what I'm going to do is let him start out by telling his story. And Sean, you've been on podcasts before, so you understand how they work. Now, we do have a little tiny panel here. I'm going to give out the telephone number. It's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And anyone out there who's interested in speaking with Sean and listening to his story, which is horrific, and he's doing such wonderful work today. I'm just so proud of him. Please do call 646-595-2118. Okay. All right. Sean, why don't you start out by telling us, I have your bio in front of me. Let's talk a little bit about what happened to you even before the age of five and work from there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can do that. The grooming process started for me very young, and even in the preschool years, and it was very subtle. And then it increased. You know, people got me more and more used to things, I suppose, until I was about the age of five, between five and six, and that's when it intensified. And at that age, I was brought into an active network of child sex trafficking. And I was part of that. So from, like I said, the grooming started seriously very, I would say, two to three, somewhere in there. And then, you know, from 5 to almost 10 years of age, I was part of a network.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. That's horrific. That's horrific. And, God, I wonder how you felt during that time. I know how I would feel. But you must have been very frightened and very confused.
Yeah,
is that how
you
were?
You experience a lot of exactly. You experience a lot of emotions as a kid. Obviously, you don't understand, and part of what happens when with either boys or girls when they're sex trafficked or even just sexually abused is you get the guilt and shame laid on you, and then the fear factor as well, because the people who got me were outside of the home. I do work with people who were abused in the family, but even there, it's just, the methods are kind of the same. So they start to groom you, they start to teach you things, and then to make sure you get it when they say that you better keep your mouth shut, they beat you. And
that's
I
right.
did get hit. And so, you know, that for a kid, for me, for example, I remember the person who started it all made sure that he told me, you know, if your family ever finds out about this, they're not going to want you. They're going to throw you out. He threatened to kill our dog. Those are common techniques used by people, men and women, who abuse children to keep them silent. And it works, because when you're five, somebody says they're going to kill your dog, you and they're adult or young adult, as was the case, you believe them. So you put on that fear and you just live in it. And so I just sort of went numb.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can identify with that, Sean. I wasn't trafficked out, but my sexual abuse started when I was six. And with a pedophile uncle, and then with my brother, and on it went, you know. And you do get numb, you know. Your childhood is taken away from you. You know, this is what happens to us, you know. And boy, I was told that I was going to be killed if I you know, said anything too. So, we're on the same page, and you know, there's so many people out there. I'd like to explain, because there's a lot of people that listen through their computers, so they're listening to the show. They're just not in my studio. You know, so very often, they will say, "We're going to hurt your family, or we're going to kill your cat or your dog, or you yourself are going to get killed, or people are never going to see you again."
Yep.
And you know, this is a horrible thing, to be trafficked out. And right now, with what's going on in our world, there is so much trafficking going on. We know this. And my heart breaks for all of those children that are being trafficked out, because it's a horrific thing. Go ahead. Continue on with your story. So tell us, how long did that last for, where you're actually a child of traffic?
That went from, like I said, the age of five till just before I turned 10, and we moved away from that town, and they never got me again. You know, and I think it's important to say, too, and people are wondering maybe, you know, how do I know something's happened? Well, later on, when my family found out, because I got very good at hiding what happened to me and hiding the, you know, the actual events, as I call them. But like, for example, I had an aunt who said, yeah, you went from the sweet little boy to an angry little kid almost overnight. And because my parents were having marital issues, everyone at the time just assumed that it was the fighting going on in the home, which had nothing, well, it had something to do with it because it made me vulnerable. But it was not the reason my personality changed. So that's one of the signs I tell people to look for. And I also say, you know, make sure that your child feels comfortable and safe coming to you about any topic, because I didn't. And that's why the people who got me knew my family dynamic, and they knew that I wouldn't say anything. And so now one of the things that I believe God does is with little kids, you know, 10 and below maybe, he gives you the ability to dissociate. And so that's often what I ended up doing. But yeah, that went on for almost 5 years.
Yeah, that's horrific. I agree with that. You know, when your mind just like blanks it out, you said you went numb. I remember feeling my face and I didn't know who or what I was feeling. I know that numb feeling. I know exactly what you're talking about. And then, of course, it affects us emotionally, too. When you say numb, it affects us emotionally. You know, we don't have we just don't think straight. I mean, how can we? How did you go to school between those ages?
I just did. I was one of those people who not taken away permanently. There are different types of trafficking. One is to actually kidnap and remove the child. Another one is to find them when you want them. If you can get a hold of them, go ahead and use them and then send them back home. And so I just went through, started, you know, kindergarten eventually, and then got into elementary school and just was, you know, had a normal sort of school day. But during the weekends or off days or something, or the summer months, you know, when people, it wasn't a large town, knew pretty much where to find me playing. If I was alone, they would just, you know, direct me to come with them and do what I was told.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that's such a horrific thing, you know, a very frightening thing. I was kidnapped and raped in New York, too. I mean, it seemed like it just went bop, 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 one thing after another, you know. And, mm-hmm. you know, you had mentioned, and you know that, you, yeah, and same with you, I'm looking at your bio here, you had mentioned that when you were a little kid and all this other stuff, that you went to school. Were you able to concentrate? Were you able to, like, act normal?
Yeah. I think that was part of the dissociation benefit, if you want to call it that. And it really is. I mean, I learned in counseling that was God's way of protecting a child's mind. So, you know, because you can't, a little kid, it would be so overwhelmed by the situation, they just kind of go away to a different place. And, but yeah, I did fine in school. I liked going to school. I will say that in the first and kindergarten and first grade, I would get into fights, and you know, I eventually got past that. And then, you know, I remember my mom years later telling me that she got a note from my third grade teacher saying he's a nonconformist. And she said, and I was happy with that because I didn't want little, just, you know, cookie cutter kids. I wanted kids who were, you know, way. And so, but I had subjects I was good at, subjects I was not good at. Math was one of them. But reading I excelled at. I think my mom told me by the end of the first grade I was reading at a sixth grade level, and I loved reading. Because, see, I could get into stories, and it was another escape. And I could do that by myself and not be in anybody's way, and you know, so. But yeah, you it's a duplicitous lifestyle, even though you don't know that you're doing it as a child, because on the one hand, when they would come and find me, you know, there were trigger words or there were words I'd been taught. For example, they would say, it's okay, it's time to perform, and you know what that means, don't you? And it's like, yep. I mean, I didn't talk to them like I do now, but I knew what they meant when they said it was, you know, it was either it's time to be a good boy or it's time to perform, and I just knew it.
Were you able to, oh my God, I remember being beaten because I would fight back, I would resist, and then I realized I couldn't do that anymore when I was in, I call it the pedophile house, because that's about what it was.
Yeah.
You got hit also. You fought back at times too, I'll bet, huh?
I did, and I can tell you that the very first time that they really beat the fight out of me, the first event that I recall and talk about is when I got lured into a shed and sexually assaulted by an older guy. He was probably 18, 19, something like that. And then later he had me in a house, in the same house. This shed was like a detached garage with a loft where it got me the first time. I was in a bedroom in the back of the house with him and two of his friends at that point. And I was fighting back, like you talk about. You fight when you're, little kids can fight too, especially when they may not know what they're fighting against, but they know something about this isn't right. And I remember that they had me undressed, of course, and he told his two friends that he was tired of this fighting crap, and he said, stretch him out, I want him to feel this. So they grabbed my hands, one of them grabbed both my hands, and the other one grabbed both my feet. They pulled me tight, and then the guy just whooped on my backside, and till a point where he said, you know, are you done fighting? And, you know, I just, at that point, had nothing left inside to fight back with. So I gave up. But from that point on, I just tried to cooperate because I didn't want to get hit anymore. Now, sometimes people would hit me just for the pure pleasure of doing it after that, and I think they thought it was reinforcement. But that one beating, what he used was a section of race car track, Hot Wheels, you know, the little plastic track.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you talk about evil, turning a kid's own toy against him. But that's what they did. And so, yeah, they beat the fight out of me. It just was what it was, but God gave it back. I got more fight in me now than I've ever had.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And then,
good for you.
That is good.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is
Darlene. Hi, Sean. We became friends, I believe, today earlier at Facebook.
Yes, we did.
And I went to the other room. I could still hear when I'm in the other room, but it's so loud. But I had to come in here for a second anyway, so I figured I would say my feelings on what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
I had looked at school as a safe place for a while because I thought, well, you know, they're not going to abuse me here like they do at home, okay? And at home we knew children were to be seen, not heard. Basically, I was afraid at school, too, that they were thinking that same way. I didn't know whether they did or not because I thought that abuse was – everybody was abused, you know? And
– yeah.
And I never did actually what you call fight, but – people had told me that when I was a little girl and, like, I spent a night over at a friend's house when I lived in Florida with my mom. She didn't care where I was. But anyway, I slept with there, and they said, we couldn't get no sleep all night because you were screaming with nightmares all night. And I couldn't remember even doing that, you know. So I had really dissociated so bad that
these things, you know, are still back there no matter what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
no, that makes sense.
Yes. Dissociation. That I believe that is God's way to help us, you know, because otherwise we would went flat crazy without being able to dissociate.
Mm-hmm. You know,
well,
thank you so much. You're strong.
I didn't dissociate, darling. Not everyone does. And I wish I had. Now that I know about dissociation, because, you know, there's so many things. I mean, it's like I can look at my childhood like it's a movie or something, and I have no emotions towards that child, Sean. I have nothing, but I watch each event. We'll call it event, okay? And I see this child who's going through so many things, and you know, it's like it never ended. Let me ask you something. How are you? Did you ever have good relationships? Were you ever able to form relationships? You know, like with women.
Oh yeah. Problem for me. I will tell you that I am happily married and have been for 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
But often when it came to dating and stuff, if anybody got too close, I would eventually kind of push them away because it's like, if you found out, because see, that's what I'd been taught by the people who got me very young. They said, if anybody ever knew where you were and what you'd done, rather than saying it correctly, what was done to you, but they wouldn't want you. And so I thought if anybody got too close to me, they wouldn't want anything. So I just never risked taking that chance. So I never got too close with anyone. But, I mean, I had good friends. I tend to be an extrovert, and which gives me, you know, strength now for what I do, certainly being a public speaker. And my wife is a powerful prayer warrior introvert. And, you know, I'll be on a platform talking to 1,200 people, and her message to me was very clear: don't you dare call me up on that stage, because she doesn't want to be. That is not her gift, and it most certainly is mine. But yeah, I mean, it's almost like the dissociation thing you learn to eventually deal with and recognize for what it is. But I will tell you, early on in our marriage, and my wife knew about the sexual abuse before we got married, neither one of us really knew, because I hadn't gotten into counseling, the depth of it. But she would say at times early on, sometimes I don't know which you I'm talking to. And, you know, and that's a product of dissociation. If something triggers you up and you respond like a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 25-year-old, it's a personality thing. Now, those are all heart wounds, and God could heal them, and he's done a lot of that in me, you know. But, yeah, it is a way of protecting a child's mind. Now, I also tell people I was blessed. I never got hurt in school. I never got hurt in church. And I know a lot of times people want to wag a finger at the church and say, there's a lot of sexual abuse going on in churches. And it's like, well, if you're going to point at churches, you better point at every other institution there is. Because it's going on in schools and homes and everything else. So I worked with a young guy, a few years ago, and he had gotten hurt in church. And he was actually trafficked by his stepfather, who had killed his mom, and was able to get a hold of him and his older brother and traffic them from about the age of 5 and 7 till they were 18, and the guy finally died. But he asked me flat out, he said, how can I believe in your God when church people hurt me? And I said, Alex, church people hurt Jesus too.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And there was silence.
You know, many people... people do that. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were done. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's just what I was going to say was you know, what I told Alex was, I said, don't judge God by the quality of his followers. And we are all sinners and have fallen short in one way or another. And then his question was, would God get mad at me if I never went in a church again? And I said, no. He understands that what happened to you. I happen to believe he will one day. But so then he asked me if I could hook him up with my counselor, and she worked with him online. And she called me a few months later, and she said, I just want you to know that Alex got saved.
Mm-hmm. 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 You know, see, a lot of us,
that's
not
wonderful.
Old, it is wonderful. Who's this? I have a 409 area code right here. Is that Roberta? Let me see. So people are starting to call in a little bit. Hold on.
Oklahoma.
Who's this, 409?
Yep, Roberta in Oklahoma. Yep, in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yep, Roberta.
Yeah. What I was going to say, I'm glad that Darlene's here and you're here, and we have our guests, and it's myself. We have no problem. We had no problem before. This is fine. Okay, so what I was going to say is we don't care how people get their healing from, okay? I'm a born-again Christian too, okay? But I had a good Catholic church, Sean. We can't count too many, you know, good Catholic churches, unfortunately. But, you know, it's not just Catholic, like you were saying. It can be any denomination. It doesn't matter whether you're Protestant, whether you're Methodist or a Jewish. I've been finding out with the Jewish population also, there is a tremendous amount of abuse that goes on. So it doesn't matter, you know, which church or whether it's the Boy Scouts or pedophiles go wherever children go. We know this, okay? And it's a horrific thing. A parent might be thinking, well, I'll have Johnny go join the Cub Scouts, and then I'll become a Boy Scout. And it turns out that for so many years they had been abusing children, and there's tons of records, just like with the Catholic Church, okay? There's tons of records of children who have been abused. And the destruction with children that happens to children, that's why I do call it crimes against children, because that's what it is, okay? There's no way of measuring it. There's no way of measuring it. And in my case, if I hadn't been saved by the church that I went to, I became a very angry, rebellious teenager. I was in fights. This is why I can relate to you so well, because I was fighting on the streets and all kinds of stuff. I was just out there and thrown out of my house. Had to be out there anyway. So we go through these things in our life, and we have to, somehow, hopefully, if you don't kill yourself, and many of us do that also, we try, we make those attempts. I tried once. That was many years ago. I was 17 years old. And so this is what happens. You know, let me ask you something. You said that you were you got along well in school. You seemed to be well-adjusted in school. Maybe that other person of yourself came out, and it was a safe haven for you also. But then you say also later on in your story, as I see in front of me, that by the time you were 19 years old, something else happened. What happened with that?
Well, that was the last time that I, the way I describe it, was gotten. And that actually happened at my first station in the military. And, you know, when I joined the military, because I really didn't want to go to college. My high school counselor told me she didn't think I'd do very well and so I should find something else. I was essentially on my own for my junior and senior year in high school. I lived with a sister for a while, and then I lived with my brother. And the military recruiter showed up, and it seemed like a good option because I thought, I don't want to go to college. But I know that once I'm graduated from high school, nobody's going to care. At least that is what it seemed like to my teenage self. So I did, and I went to boot camp, and I did very well. In fact, I'm odd because I sort of liked boot camp. People were yelling at me, and it's like, man, I feel like a kid again because I just spent 2 years. When you're a high school junior and senior, you know, I was paying rent, buying food, buying car insurance, doing all the things that you do as an adult and still going to high school and working a part-time job. I got into boot camp and people are yelling. It's like, I feel like a kid again, my normal age. So I got through that. I got through my basic training course after boot camp and I got assigned to a military post and the place where I was working, I remember walking in. And the person I worked for looked at me and said, what are you, 14? You look, you know, you can't be more than, and really? And I said, I'm 19 and not 18, because he thought I was 18, and as if there's a difference, well, to a 19-year-old, there would be. But it should have alerted me at that point when he looked at me and thought I looked 14 or 15, and because I did look very young. I didn't shave. I just looked like a kid. So what happened was after a couple of months there, I was on a watch rotating schedule and there were periods where I'd have, like 52 hours off in a row. And so he came and got me and he said, well, you're coming with me today. And we went to probably, it was one of the civilians who was assigned there, went to his house and, it started by they plopped me down in front of a television and played a porn video, which was very odd. And then they started having me play poker with them, and I didn't know how to play poker. And they were feeding me alcohol. And then they decided to take me to the movies, as they called it. So we went up to the base theater. I don't even know what film we were at. And they were giving me more alcohol there. And, you know, I had learned to drink actually when I was pretty young. But they fed me enough that I eventually just passed out. Well, later I woke up. I was in a private room somewhere with a pool table, and I was totally undressed and bent over a pool table. And I remember waking up and looking up and hearing this guy say to somebody in the back room, hey, you want some of this? And I looked behind me and there were three people lined up and I don't know how many more were there, but I just kind of passed out again because it just was. And then the next time I woke up, I was back on, in uniform, actually in my duty station. And so somebody took me back, got me dressed and sobered me up and put me on watch kind of thing. But that was, see, and the people early on told me, when you turn 18, 19, or 20, you should probably just die because you're not going to be worth anything anymore. And I was absolutely terrified approaching my 20th birthday that something was going to kill me. But that's when I finally got mad enough to say, no more. You know, nobody's going to just assume they can hurt me like this any longer. And, you know, so, yeah, it started truly in when I was in preschool with the grooming and then ended when I had just turned 19. And it just was what it was. And, you know, I've been asked why I didn't say anything. And it's like, well, first of all, who am I going to report to? And second of all, the truth is because of the way I grew up, I was just used to it. It sounds
almost indifferent. Well, you knew that it was wrong, though. You knew that it was wrong, right?
Not really at the time. I just assumed, because I'd been taught that's what I was made for. I knew I didn't like it, but I was buying into a lie of the enemy that that's what I'd been made for. So if people want to use you, then they get to use you. That's I was still fully vested in a completely evil identity that didn't belong to me. And God, of course, eventually brought me to a place where he said, let me show you who I intended you to be.
Mm-hmm. 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 Unbelievable, yeah. Let me go to the panel here, Darlene, and then I'm going to go to Roberta and have them make some comments or ask a question or two. Go ahead, Darlene.
Hey, I'm so glad you're here and you're telling your story. It's you're very brave in doing that. And I want to say, too, I have a son in Colorado. He's in the Space Force, though.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was interesting and cool, you know. I really like the things you are saying and getting out there because it somebody is probably listening to the radio shows or will listen to it because they are recorded. And it's going to help a lot of people. And for that, I want to thank you for what you're doing.
You're very welcome. And can I just add one thing, too? Believe it or not, I ended up doing 20 years in the military. I do not regret my time in the military. I don't have hard feelings against it. It was, for me, and mostly a good experience. That one place was not good, but there was a lot of good that came out of it. So, I don't regret that. In fact, I enlisted as an E-1 and I retired as an O-3. So I became a commissioned officer.
Were you in the Air Force too?
Navy.
Oh, you were in the Navy?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm so glad you're getting that out because, you know, the people in, I believe it's Texas at that Fort Hood or something where they kept being sexually assaulted, and then when they reported, they were found dead over there.
They also busted a pedophile.
That's very scary, you know.
It is. And in reality, it's going on in every... I tell people child abuse, whether it's verbal, physical, emotional, or sexual, is happening in every town in the United States. I would stake my life on it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And it's not a third world thing, and it's not really just a girl thing. That's the other challenge I face. People tell me, well, I heard trafficking happened, but I only assumed it was just girls. Well, it's been proven now that the boys are actually 50% of the victims in the U.S., but they're radically underrepresented, which is another reason why I believe God gave me a voice to help men and boys who've been hurt like I was.
Yes,
so.
Yes. I want to invite you also. We have a Zoom meeting thing that's not recorded, but people can come in and voice their opinion or get to know somebody. Mm-hmm. And support each other, and they're on Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays at 1:00 Central Time. And I want to invite anybody who's listening to come and join it.
Okay.
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, yeah.
Sir?
I think you should listen. Yes, you said he'd be happy to, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Offers, yes. And you two have already been speaking back and forth. NASCA offers a lot of different things. It's not just, you know, the radio show here. We have programs. We have Zoom now, as I call it. I call it Zoom. It's the recovery groups. And like Darlene is saying, that's Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. You can go to a Zoom meeting. And you can be on camera or off camera. It doesn't matter. It's up to you. And, you know, you go into these rooms and there are other survivors there. And from what I've been told, it's a very good thing. I stay primarily with NASCA because I've been here 11 years. It's comfortable, I guess. I don't know. And the Zoom is newish. And, you know, we do offer so many things. By the way, our website is naasca.org, NASCA.org, and you can go to that website, and you'll learn an awful lot from that website. You scroll down just a little bit, you'll find red lines, as I call it. Click onto any one of those red lines, and you will find all kinds of menus that drop down of different things to learn from how to speak to your children, what to say, what not to say, prevention, intervention, and recovery, a lot of some legal, all kinds of things, you know. There's a lot to learn from NASCA, so I always do mention that as well. I want to go down to Roberta now and see if she what she has to say. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm glad to be here. And who? What is the gentleman's name?
His name is Sean, honey.
I'm Sean.
John. Oh, okay. Hi, John. I was listening, and it just kind of broke my heart a little bit what you said, and it touched my heart because I'm just now opening my heart and soul in therapy, and I'll be 58 Sunday, a lot of my abuse started in my early childhood, and a lot of it is military related. And but years and years and years of abuse and different forms and by different people in so many ways. And but you know, I'm glad to know that you've made it where you are now today. And I too feel like that men and boys need help just like women and girls. And anyway, that's just all I wanted to say. I'm glad you're here. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Well,
thank you for that. Yeah. Go ahead. Okay.
And that took a lot of courage to call in like that, I would say. And I'm glad you're on the healing path. And believe me, yeah, it's a bumpy road, but it just keeps getting better. And, you know, we are not defined by what people did to us. And what I tell people is, you know, I was abused. I was actually used in child pornography at one point, but that is not the end of my story, and it doesn't have to be the end of theirs either.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's right.
You're welcome.
You know, it's amazing. It's amazing. I just love it when men call in because, you know, men are starting to come forward more now. I'm sure you'll agree with that because at one time, you know, man up. That was always the things that men would be told. Man up, you know, get over it. You know, they have to be macho. They're not allowed to have feelings. They're not allowed to express the feelings. They're not allowed to even talk about it, for God's sake. Women are more apt to talk about child abuse than men because of all the stigma that's attached to a man. You know, and so many do turn, like, to alcohol and drugs and other things, you know, pornography, you know, all kinds of things. Did you, as you were growing up, then I want to ask you about, first of all, let's get to your brother. You said you have a brother and sister. Is that what you said, or what did I hear?
I have two older sisters and one older brother.
Oh, there you go. Are you in contact with them today, and were they ever abused?
They were never abused, and I have an amazing relationship with everybody in my family now. My mom has passed away, but... excuse me, but my father is still alive. I have a great relationship with him. I didn't for a long time. And my siblings, I have a great relationship. You know, they all know my story, and they all support me. And they were all surprised by it. And, you know, at one point, my older brother felt like I should have protected you. And it's like, Kyle, you there's no way you could have. Besides that, you were all of 1 year older. What they were doing to me, they could have, you know, done to you. It's not like you would have been much of a fight. But, and they understand that now. So, yeah, I have a great family. I have an extended family network, aunts, uncles, cousins, everybody knows. And, you know, you talk about a God blessing. I don't have to feel like I have to hide it anymore. And obviously, if I'm talking on a broadcast to, you know, all 50 states and who knows who else, I'm not bound up by shame, guilt, and fear.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you something. First of all, this is worldwide. Okay, we have people who've called in.
There
you
go.
Yeah, we've had people call in from Vietnam. We've had people call in from down under. Okay. And all different other countries. So you never know who's listening. We had this guy call in one night from Israel, and we went back and forth quite a bit, and he came on quite a few times, and then he opened up a foundation, I believe, over in Israel for children who have been abused. And by listening through NASCA, he learned a lot. Like I said, the NASCA, NAASCA.org website does offer an awful lot of information. You've done a lot of presentations. I've done some presentations. And, of course, with the COVID, I haven't done anything this year at all. It's very hard because I go to universities usually and churches. They've actually allowed me in a couple of churches. I can't believe it. But I didn't go to a Catholic church, though, Sean. No, I didn't think that was such a good idea. But I went to usually churches that were, they could be any religion. It didn't matter what it was. And it was sort of like a charismatic type of thing without being charismatic. And, of course, charismatic was way back in the 70s. That's when it first started. And it was good back then because I was a part of that, and I know. They helped me tremendously. And then all of a sudden, I think something bad happened, and I think they might be back again. I'm not sure. But like you had made mention of before, and I think it's even in the bio a little bit, you don't have to go to a church. If God is in your heart, he's in your heart, okay? And that's fine. People don't have to go to church if they don't want to. We're going to start talking in a minute about, I know you're an author. You, I believe it's called, your name of your book is called Wretch. That's WRETCH - Haunted by Shadows, comma, Rescued by Jesus. And that's quite a title there. And there are a lot of people that come on this show who are very much, believing in Christ, and so forth. And that has been their saving grace, and that was my saving grace as well. So, and I'm not the only one on the panel here that has had that experience. So, again, I went to counselors. We had such a big prayer group, Sean. There were over 200 people, and they come from all walks of life. So by coming from all walks of life, there were counselors there. And they said to me, "You're a mess." And I said, "Yes, I am." And so they worked with me. And today I am where I am, and I feel comfortable within myself. I feel comfortable in my skin because I have come so well and so far, on the healing journey, as we call it here. But it took a time to get there. It doesn't happen overnight. Tell us a little bit more. Yeah, it does not happen overnight. You go like 10 steps forward and 5 steps backwards, and then you go forward again, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. But one thing that I do agree with, too, is that when you go out and you do presentations and or whatever it is that you do that's public, and we're going to get into all the things that you've done, it does make you stronger. And your voice, if you were ever a little bit timid, I remember the first time that I went out and did a presentation, I took water with me, a bottle of water, and because my mouth would get dry because I was a little bit nervous. I was over my panic. I suffered from panic attacks. Have you ever suffered from panic or nightmares or any of those things that so many people suffer from, the PTSD?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All of
Let's
the,
talk a little bit about that. Remember, we're educating people. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, before I started counseling, and I go to a non-denominational Pentecostal charismatic type church, just so you know, but I work with a lot of people from different churches, And I, my style of worship is not the same, you know, what works for everybody, but it's still, I do believe we're called to gather. But before I started getting counseling, and when I started that, it's like I worked with an amazing lady named Allison. And, you know, she's, I told her, I don't have any memory of a time when those images of those events didn't walk out in my dreams every night. It's like the enemy was showing little snippets of, you know, just brief images. And I never saw the whole pictures. And then I would have these very bizarre nightmares. And, you know, I described some of that in my book, too, in terms of once I started counseling, then I started having very realistic visions and encounters with the demonic, which tried to frighten me into silence. But certain things still, like extremely loud noises, you know, if I'm in a room and there's a sound system and somebody's testing it and the microphone pops, it does startle me. I have been to two war zones, so there's some of that. But, you know, we can take – what I learned is in terms of nightmares, Paul says that we can take thoughts captive. And so what – I have a very simple trick that I learned from a counselor, and it's like, okay, when you get out, when you wake up from that, don't just lay there in a sweat and be frightened. I tell myself, this is not of God. This is not of me. And then I start reciting scripture. And you pick any verse you want. And what I tell people, usually I'll go to the 21st Psalm, you know, and start walking through that. And it may take 15 minutes, but ultimately the light of the Word of God replaces the darkness of the nightmare, and I'm able to go back to sleep. And before, I would just lay there awake all night, and because I didn't want to go back to sleep because I was afraid of it. And now I just, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Word truly is a light unto our, and a lamp unto our feet, and there's power in that places, those dark images. And you remind yourself in doing that who God says you are, not what people said you were. I got called every name in the book, and you talked about addictions earlier. I can tell you by the time I was 8 or 9, I knew how to drink. I knew how to smoke. And I knew all about pornography and was probably just addicted to it. I just assumed that was normal because I was groomed with it. Those habits are gone. So, you know, it, but yeah, the PTSD, the thing that I've learned is until you, it's very frightening to want to talk about it. But until you find somebody in whom you can be comfortable and confident and you start speaking it out, and you'll find, like you said, every time I spoke, it got a little better and a little better and a little better. And ultimately, you know, God restored my voice. He restored my image. And every wound becomes a weapon. And that's what I use now to fight back, because people come to me and say, I don't know if you understand, but this is what happened to me. And quite honestly, I haven't heard a story yet that I didn't understand, you know, didn't experience in one form or another. So, you know, wounds become weapons and we fight back.
That's so true. You see, that's why we always say here on this show, and, you know, maybe other shows say it too, I don't know, but our stories are never quite the same, but there's so much similar, you know. And the damage that is done to us so often is very similar, too. I mean, I had terrible panic attacks. I wrote a book years ago now called Panic Child, A Howling True Story of Sexual Abuse and Neglect. And that sold all over the world, for God's sake. It was written in Japanese. I saw these little squiggle marks, and I didn't know what it was. You know, yeah. I checked out Amazon, and I said, what the heck are those squiggle marks? And then it said above it, Japanese. So, you never know who's going to get a hold of your book. And, of course, that wasn't right. They didn't ask me if they could publish my book. You have to be very careful when you self-publish. My book's everywhere because so many companies got a hold of it, okay? But the point is this, you know, it takes time. It takes time. And people say to me, and I'm going to go to the panel in a second, and I'm sure they'll both agree with this, well, if there was a God, if there's really a God, then why does he allow for all of these things to happen? What would you say to that? And then I'll tell you what I say to that. Go ahead.
Well, my answer to that is we live in a world of free will, and even children are not free will of others, and that's why God commands that we protect our children. And so the Bible is clear that there is our battle is not against flesh and blood, but of the spiritual forces of alive and well and operating in the world today. God does not approve of what people do to us or the evil that's taking place. And all I can tell you is that in my own story, he was there. People say, where was God when they were doing that to me? And my answer is, where was God when a son was on the cross? He was there. He knew the end of the story, just like he knew that in 2010, I would run into a counselor who would lead me into a salvation and deliverance process. And then, I went through that, and there was a process I went through, and there were demonic strongholds, and the last one got pulled off of me, and I collapsed in that room with my counselor and her friend who were working with me, and I looked at those ladies and I said, I'm free, because the last one was gone, and suddenly a light filled inside of me. I had no idea what was coming, but I know, even today I was working with a counselor, and people ask me how much is left, and I say, I don't know what's left, but I know what's left behind. So yes, we live in a world. There's a great book for people who want to answer those questions. It's called Letters from a Skeptic, and it's a father and son exchange in letters, and he answers those questions very well. The son's a pastor, the father's an agnostic atheist, and he asks those kinds of questions. And truthfully, because I had to learn it, that was one of my books I got when I just graduated a 2-year Bible school last July. And it was one that I had to read and do a book report on. And it's like, I'm so glad I'm done with school now, but I love the book. We live in a free world of free will, but not forever. There is a time coming when a reckoning will be held.
Yeah, I believe that too. I believe that too. And I couldn't have said it any better than you did, because that's the point right there. That's how we differ from the animals. We're supposed to have a conscience, okay? And we do have free will. So then I have people that say to me, well, how come there's a psychopath and a sociopath, and they don't care if they go out and they kill or they rape and all this other stuff that they do? I used to work at a psychiatric facility as a state technician, so I did work with the murderers. And, of course, they don't have any empathy. They lack empathy. Well, then I've had people say to me, well, Carol, you've worked there. I've worked quite a few places. Every place that paid more, I went. I had 2 kids. But I learned a lot each place I went to. And they sent me to school. But anyway, the point is this. How would you answer that? If the psychopaths and the sociopaths have no conscience, and what do you think God does with them? Because this is asked of me. I'm asking this of you. Go ahead.
Yeah, and my answer to that is we don't know anyone's eternal destiny. Only God knows somebody's heart, and he knows their experiences. Now, I believe that there are people in the world who, for whatever reason, are never held accountable. It's like little kids who are killed early or have people with severe mental disabilities. But ultimately my answer is That's not my job anyway. God is our judge. The Holy Spirit is the one who convicts us, and our job as people is to love. And so one of the things I actually do today is I go to the jail ministry. I work in that with convicted sex. So ultimately, you know, we don't know. And people want to get into debates about, well, what if Hitler, you know, repented on his last second on earth and accepted Christ? Does that mean he would have gone to heaven? That's like, well, yes, it does. But I guarantee you, you know, the Bible talks about in our Father's house there are many rooms. And and I think people who are last second conversions are still important to God, because God says he wants everyone to repent and come home. Do I believe Hitler actually did? No, I don't. But I guess we'll find out when we get to heaven.
Well, I sure hope that's where I'm going. I think I will. I don't know. Well, you know, we look back, like Darlene, maybe she can look back, and I know Roberta can look back, and I can look back at the things that we did, you know, at a much earlier age. I was out on the street, so I lived with the street people for a little while, not a terribly long time, because after that, I got into singing, and I ended up in New York City singing, and I had, you know, Thomas Trulove, that was my agent, but and that actually helped straighten me out. But I had to get drunk first, Sean, a little bit before I'd get up and sing, because I suffered from panic attacks. And I love to sing. I sing from the morning till the night. That's what I do. I probably drive my neighbors crazy, and I don't care, okay? But, you know, there's ways of uplifting, the spirit, you know, and singing to me is a way of uplifting the spirit. Doesn't always have to be spiritual songs, you know, like religious songs. It can be rock and roll. I don't care what it is. I'm having a good time, okay? So, you know, it's God works in people's lives in a strange way. And you know, we're each his children, so therefore he has, I guess, naughty children. And then he has children who are trying to be good, and then he has children who are terribly, terribly abused. And I don't blame myself either. You mentioned something a couple of minutes ago. You said that there's no shame and no blame, because we were victims of circumstance. That's what we were. And we were trying to survive. And in your case, you didn't even realize that things weren't quite normal. You thought that a lot of things were normal. Did you have friends in school?
Did I? Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I did too. We were all dysfunctional, trust me. But we blended together. And in fact, they were my singing buddies. And we would die for each other. You know, this is how it was, because that's what we had. We had our relationship. We had our friendships. And you know, we were in with some naughty people. We did some, you know, we watched them. I wasn't a drug addict. I didn't shoot up heroin. The others did, okay? I popped pills, though, and I drank. So, you know, one's as bad as the other. So that's why I'd asked you about the alcohol and so forth. Now, I started with the cigarettes when I was 13, and I started to drink a little bit because I'd go to my parents, my mother and my stepfather's alcohol cabinet. And I go glug, 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 and then I put some water in it. You know, I finally got caught, okay, because they had company over, and they went to serve, you know, alcohol, and they said, oh, this tastes funny. Well, yeah, it did. That's because I put a lot of water in it. But anyway, okay, let's go to the panel here. I want Darlene and then, of course, Roberta to make a comment or ask you a question. Go ahead, Darlene, go ahead.
Hey, you heard my friend a minute ago responding to you. I'm over at his house. We're going to have lasagna for supper. So, anyway, you know, it's great, and it's kind of hard to talk about because a lot of people do ask that question that you asked, you know, and they'll say, if there was a God, you know, why did he allow you to be abused? Why? Da, 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 da. I have to keep saying, well, God said, you know, man's free will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, there are a lot of broken people, as my friend just said, you know, and we can't fault God or blame God when somebody goes and does something against his will. So God warned it in the Bible that it was going to be like this, you know, so we know to expect a lot of this, and it's sad that this is happening, but we can always turn it around and say, well, look, you know, what happened to me, I can help somebody else, you know, help somebody else through it and stuff. And so that's the positive about this happening, but it's not like I'm saying, yeah, go and do this and, you know, to try to get somebody help or something, but I'm just saying, you know, we could turn it around after we have been abused and help somebody else, like he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
That Sean's doing.
Well,
absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the Bible says, I'm thinking, I can't recall the exact verse, I believe it's in Corinthians, that we will use the things that God used to help us to help others. And that's exactly
right.
What we do. But we talk, people want to make it a fairness question. And, you know, so that's what we do. And, you know, the other thing that I've heard people say, that they want to talk about greater and lesser sins, and I understand that. The sins that were committed against us, if people need to remember, especially if they're reliving, trying to sort this out in their mind, a child cannot consent, they can only comply. But
that's,
you know,
right.
So you have to be willing to accept that. You didn't, it's like the person that I was speaking to today reminded me, it's not what you let people did to you, it's what they chose to do to you without your consent. You know, and so I say too, I understand that there are good theological discussions about greater and lesser sins, but ultimately my answer is this: the punishment for all sin is the same, separation from God. And so
that's right.
I don't point fingers at others and say, well, you know, you're much worse than me. That's a kind of an old churchy kind of game that I don't get into. Because I just have to remind myself of my own stupid mistakes. But, you know, that's why I say it's God's job to judge, the Spirit's job to convict, and ours is to love.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time. I'm going to go right to you, Roberta, in just a second. But in response to what he's saying, I have a hard time forgiving the people that abused me because they knew what they were doing. See, I have a problem with that. So I just give it to God because that's too big for me.
Yep.
Well, a pedophile uncle who is 176 times he touched me. And I was 6 years old to 7.5 years old living in that maniac's house, and I will call him a maniac. And every time he touched me, I'd put a mark on a piece of paper that I had. It was a picture that I was drawing. It was a very long piece of paper, so I had a lot of area to mark it. When I got out of that house, I took that with me, and I didn't look at it for years, not for years, Sean. And then finally one day I looked at it and I counted those lines. They thought probably I was trying to put a border around what I had drawn. And then you go to the brother, should have been the big brother. He was 5 years older than me. It took me years before I would speak about my brother on this show. But you know what? The injustice was done to me. I don't even know if he's dead or alive. Couldn't tell you, and I don't care. All right? I confronted him once. And he said, oh, you liked it. Oh, really? Not for my brother. Oh, no. Sorry. You know, don't go there. I don't do that stuff. But, and then with other people in my life, so being kidnapped and raped in New York. Yes, I was kidnapped and raped in New York. and but I was one of 14. And when that man got caught, we all had to look mugshots. They'd come to school, take me out in front of my peers. Horrifying. I hated that. And so anyway, I had to look at the peers, you know, watching me and making fun of me. I felt like, for God's sake, it was my fault, but it wasn't my fault. I knew it wasn't my fault. But you know how when you're a kid, you know, you feel, okay? So finally I asked for them, please, to come to my home, and they didn't go to the school anymore. Thank God. So then I looked at the mugshots at home instead of downtown. So, but he only got 3 years imprisonment. For 14 girls, we had to show up, and quite frankly, the wife kept, you know, partitioning the courts to the through lawyers, through attorneys, and all this other stuff, that she was having hardship at home because she had three children, and one was an 8-year-old girl, and that's what I was at that time when I had gotten kidnapped. And finally, that 3-year sentence went down to a year and a half. That's all he did. Now, so you see, I have a lot of anger in me. Yeah. Because when you think of the damage, the damage, though, that's done to kids mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically. Some people can't have children because of what happened to them. All these things that are done to children, all right? And then they get off almost scot-free. Now, that makes me mad, and I still have a little anger issue with certain things, because what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong. What's black is black, what's white is white. Sometimes there is no gray area. And when it comes to child abuse, there is no gray area. I don't see it. Go ahead and say what you're going to say.
No, you're
down to Roberta. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I'll address the question of forgiveness because it's a hard concept for people to understand, and I've forgiven those people that did that to me, and in fact I pray now that they get God change their heart, they repent, and I see them in heaven. And people say, how is that even possible to do that? My answer is, you have to understand what forgiveness does. It doesn't let them off the hook. It lets you off the hook. Forgiveness says that God will hold you accountable, and I guarantee that his punishment will be far more severe than anything I could come up with. And the other thing, too, holding on, I tell people, look, holding on to unforgiveness is like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. It just does.
I've heard people say that. I'm sorry for laughing, but I didn't say that, but I've heard other people say that. Go ahead.
Well, I absolutely believe it because, see, when I was able to forgive those people, it was like this giant weight fell off of me. They're not let off the hook. Now, sometimes people say, well, if you've forgiven somebody, that means you have to reconcile. No, forgiveness does not require reconciliation, especially with an abusive situation. But I turned it all over to God and said, Lord, you deal with these people. And then he changed my heart so much that I said, you know, I don't believe that it started with them. I believe that they were probably abused, and the people before them and the people before them, and it goes all the way back to the enemy. And so, you know, but there's no point in holding on to unforgiveness because all it does, you could walk around mad at them forever and they might have no clue or could care less. So what good does it do you? But when you turn it over to God, like I said, they may not get caught in the natural, but I guarantee you they'll get caught in the supernatural. And eternity is a lot longer than our time here on earth.
Well said. Well said. You see, that's what I did. I turned it over to God, too. Because, like I said, it was too big for me. Too big for me. Let's go down to Roberta and see what she has to say.
Oh, well, I was just thinking about a lot of things, listening and everything, and like I said, I'm just now opening up and talking with my therapist, and a lot of things I got blocked out, and sometimes I think it's worse than what I want to believe, you know, because, I mean, I had a physical injury to my brain, and I was unconscious in another accident, right, you know, about 7 or 8 years old, but I think there was a lot of other things going on before then, And I don't know, I was kind of scared to even pray about it and ask my Heavenly Father to search that out, you know, and you know, at least I'm willing to now to trust him enough to, you know, to search it out. But it's not, you know, it's not happening all at once. And but I am glad that I still belong to him and he hasn't let me go and that I wasn't destroyed. And I'm still alive, and you know, I mean, these people would make a killing off of me and kill me too, and it was hard, you know, but now I don't know. I see my Heavenly Father in a different light, and I just know everything happens in His timing, His way, and for His purpose, and whatever comes up, and is revealed or revealed, and what isn't. But I mean, when someone threatens you and says, you know, it's your word against mine, no witnesses, not a damn thing you can do about it, and threatens if you talk, you know, and you live in fear for years and years and years, and I mean, it's just a year ago I decided not to live in fear, you know. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it was 2019 whenever I'm not going to say reconnected with my Heavenly Father, but I got right with him, you know, where I had to apologize for not talking with him and turning away, and then everything was all right, and my faith has come back now, and I'm really glad where I am today. But when people say get over it, bury it, forget it, you know, I have problems with that because I am entitled to my feelings and emotions, even my damaged emotions and my pent-up feelings and my broken heart and all my soul wounds, and I have a right to them. But, you know, I don't have to dwell in the past. And really, really, I don't even think about my therapy until the day before and the day of and the day after, and it's not so great. But any other time, it's all right. So anyway, I really am glad to know that there's other people, a lot of other people who have, you know, survived, and I'm sorry for the ones that have not. And three of my babies didn't get to survive. And it's hard because my birthday's Sunday, and I think of the birthdays I would have had with them, and I didn't have them with them to celebrate, and my dog. But anyway, I have another son, and I don't know what his life was like. And my cousin adopted him, but I didn't want him going through what I went through, and I didn't have the capability to be a mother, and that's just the way it was. But I think Heavenly Father will, I see something good coming out of it all. You know, I used to think it was the end of the world. I thought it was all doom and gloom, and I couldn't even have any hope. And now it's all getting better, so that's all I have.
That's good.
Could I say something?
You bet. Go ahead.
Can I say something? Okay,
yes.
Roberta, I see that it is working for good. I used to see through dark glasses, you know, where I didn't see nothing. I think you're seeing dark and gloomy also. And then I had to shed these dark glasses, and then they're, you know, the was so blocking me from seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And now I'm on the other side at the end of the tunnel, but I'm not completely all the way better, but I'm okay doing this because I'm still learning. But my friend right here, Jimmy, he's got something he wanted to say, that Bible verse.
Basically, it says that if you think these people are going to go unaccountable for what they do to children, God says in the Bible, which I do not know where the passage is, but he says it's better for a man to put a millstone around his neck and throw himself into the sea than it is for a man to hurt one of his little ones.
Mm-hmm.
So don't think that they won't get away with they'll get away with it, because they won't. I guarantee that.
And you can imagine having one of them big stones around you and then going down like, you know, you're going to drown or whatever, you know, you're dead. You're dead,
yep.
Basically,
well,
you know.
I just want to say that, I mean, I know that whenever around that time, a lot of things were happening, and that's when I gave my heart to Jesus Christ when I was about 7 years old, and I know the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much, and the scripture no greater love, and some people go above and beyond the call of duty, and I just want to say that Matthew 7:7, John 3:16, and 1 Corinthians 15, in that prayer and them people that were around then saved my life and helped save my life, and I don't regret it.
Don't breathe into the phone, Roberta. Don't breathe into the phone. You're like one of those people that breathes in the phone. He goes, never mind.
Sorry about that. I apologize.
It's okay.
You
listen, say something and then... Listen to me, honey. We haven't even touched, and we only have a few minutes left. Oh, my God, this show flew. Okay, it went by so fast. We have to get into what he's doing today because this guy here... First of all, of course, you realize now you're a NASCA family member. Once you tell your story, you can come on any day of the week, okay, Monday through Friday, if you have time, and choose a show to come on and be a part of the panel. So that's very good. And you have so much to offer. Yeah. So, and certainly know what time to call in. So there you go. Listen to me. Tell us quickly what it is that you do, that you've done. You've been on the 700 Club. I remember you mentioning that. Go ahead. And what else have you done? You do many presentations. And what else do you do?
Yeah. Well, I was also interviewed at 100 Huntley Street in Toronto. That's Canada's version of the 700 Club. And they were the first ones to put me on TV. And then the 700 Club called me, and they did a segment on me. I've been written about in Charisma Magazine Online. I do work with a number of organizations. I am on the Survivor Voice Council for ECPAT, which is headquartered in New York, and that is an organization that's been around about 22 years. They're in 80 countries worldwide, and it stands for End Child Pornography and Trafficking, and they're out of New York. I'm a consultant to Polaris, which is a national organization involved in child fighting trafficking. I work with Veterans for Child Rescue out of Arizona. They actually do sting operations, working with law enforcement. The guy that runs that is a former Navy SEAL, former U.S. Marshal. And his name is Craig Sawyer, and so that's Veterans for Child Rescue. And then I also am connected with the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, and what they are is an international law enforcement organization. The U.S. is a member. There are 57 member nations, 70 nonprofits part of that, and through them I'm a consultant, and I speak at their global symposium last year. It was the first time in July on child trafficking, providing a voice for boys. And, you know, locally I do trainings where I'm asked. I will go to churches when I'm asked. I've traveled to, I've spoken in Dallas. I've spoken in Lake Providence, Louisiana. I've been invited tentatively to a church in Arkansas I'll have to look up the town, and then one in Missouri. And I tell people, you know, I'm happy to come anywhere they want. I may need help getting there. So, you know, locally I provide training as well when I'm asked, and I've connected with several churches. So, yeah, I'm quite busy.
I don't think we've had anyone on that said quite so much. I mean, that's amazing. I think you're amazing. And when do you sleep? You're so involved. It's amazing. It really is.
I'm very high energy. And I do run Starfish Ministries, which is my own nonprofit. And I'm a terrible boss because I pay me nothing. I don't care.
Yeah, we understand that here at NASCA. Go ahead.
And you know, I mean, I say I have that there's a series of slogans at my church that talks that we use to get people into, you know, your sort of life. And the first thing is, you know, God, find freedom, discover purpose, and make a difference. And a lot of people want to say, I don't know what my purpose in life is. And your purpose, my answer to that is to glorify God. Well, how do I do that? Well, you ask him. But be prepared for an answer that you may not want. If you told me 10 years ago I'd be speaking globally about being sex trafficked as a little boy, I would have said you're crazy, and probably had a few less than Christian words to go along with it.
Yeah, right.
Healed yet. And yet here I am. And I find great joy in what I do. And God provides. I do get grants approved, and, you know. And it's just, it's incredible. But, I can usually, there are times when I haven't slept overnight, so I may go 2 days, but it's very rare anymore. And so I can get by in about 5 hours, but I usually prefer about seven.
You
know.
Well, you know, it's been a pleasure to have you. It's been a wonderful experience having you on here. That's why I had to cut people off, because he's done so much. Darlene Rivera, you hear this man, what he said. When you have the time, you can come to NASCA and sit in and be on the panel some night, you know. And because people do need direction, they need hope. That's what they need. They need hope. That's one of the biggest things people need today, because there is so much corruption in the world, and there is so much crime in the world against children. And there are over 60 million American adult survivors of child and of sexual abuse. 60 million. That's what we know of, Sean, because how many don't tell? And it's my privilege and pleasure, and I'm going to write something on Facebook later, that you are a wonderful guest, and you're so varied in all that you've done, and you know, you're so, you know, you've done such a wonderful job in your life. So in the beginning of your life, you went to hell, in plain English. So many of us have. And but you turned all of that around, and look what you've done. So kudos to you, you know. So,
Thank you very much.
You know, it's...
Where are you guys
I'm waiting... Well, we're stationed in Florida. I'm from New York. Well, I was born in New York, raised in New York part of my life, and moved to New Jersey. Believe it or not, I like New York better. But, we're from all over. We're from all over the states and from all over the world on this show. So that's why
I
said people. Go ahead.
Well, and if anyone from Australia is listening, I would love an invite down there. But I'll go anywhere.
Well,
you mentioned Vietnam there. I would literally go to any country where I can. I would not go back to Afghanistan. I was there with the military, and the Holy Spirit had told me very clearly not to go back, because I was trying to, and so I didn't. But I pray for the people there. Once you accept the purpose to which God has placed you, then you find great joy in it, and that's what I do.
Yes, it gives you an uplift feeling, absolutely, to go out and help people. I love to work with the homeless, too, and I do that in New York when I can. I can't right now. But anyway, I want to thank the two gals that called in. Thank you so much, Darlene and Roberta, and certainly our guest was wonderful. So it's all recorded, and if you want to listen to it later, just go to the archives on the bottom of the page, all right, to the bottom of the page, and it'll be there. It says current. It'll say current. And then just click onto that, And then what you do is you search for your name and your show. The scan number, Sean, is 2640, okay? So you look for your name and then 2640 and the date, okay? And then you'll have it.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, everyone, thank you so much. And I know there's a lot of people that did listen. They just didn't come on. That's all right. Some people are bashful. And then there'll be those also, too, that listen later. So thank you. God bless to all of you. And you're welcome back anytime, okay. Sean, when you can find time. Okay. All right. So thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Good night now.
Good night. And
thank
God bless.
You. Good night and
good
God
night.
Bless. Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.